Hi, I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And I'm Maya Grant.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
Today, we are returning to our geeky roots.
It's true.
But with an angry feminist twist.
As always, as if we ever didn't have that. A little belatedly, but we want to talk about the movie Captain Marvel. Not so much what we thought of the movie, though we'll get into that. But also this phenomenon we've been seeing over the last few years where these female-led films in the realm of geek media have become some kind of battleground in the culture wars. And it's weird.
It's really strange. It's really strange. And we're going to articulate just what makes it so fucking weird. But first, how are we doing and what are we drinking?
Well, I have to say, I'm feeling weirdly lightheaded. I either did not get enough sleep last night or I'm coming down with something. I'm not sure. I probably shouldn't be drinking, but listeners, I made a promise.
For you. It's for you.
If I said I'm going to drink, I'm doing it. So we'll see where this goes. I'm drinking a Bloody Mary.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I made a whole bunch of Bloody Mary mix because we had friends over to watch soccer and it's on during the day. And I thought it would be a nice thing for people to have, but I made way too much. So now I have to drink Bloody Marys until it's gone. And I also have this tequila. So I did jalapeno-infused tequila. I don't remember if I've mentioned this to you or on the show before, perhaps both. But long story short, you're supposed to infuse it for like 20 minutes with the jalapenos. I infused it for like 3 days. So it's undrinkable. It's like drinking liquid peppers. But when you put it in the Bloody Mary, it's actually pretty good. It gives it a nice spice and
Thank God. Manageable.
Oh. So I finally found a use for my way too spicy tequila. What are you drinking, Maya?
Well, I'm back to my California ways, drinking a kombucha dark and stormy, which I really want somebody to help me come up with a name for it. Because it's ginger, like dark and storm, like it's ginger lemonade kombucha. It's perfect. It tastes great. No additional sugar. It's very probiotic. There's nothing about it that tastes strange. It's really good.
It's good for your digestion.
That's
or something.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Wonderful. Got to repopulate that microbiome while you're also killing the microbiome. It balances out, I guess.
Right, right. I was just did a spit take, guys. I'm doing all right. I just want to share one piece of listener feedback from @MarvelousPatrick, who you guys should all follow on Twitter. And he wrote that he loves us. And he said, seriously, such a great podcast by very smart women. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll drink, and you'll learn.
Yes. Isn't that wonderful?
All I feel of like those should, things. All
that
of
should
those
be
things.
Our new tagline.
I think so, too. Okay. Well, guys, I think we now have to get into, I had to watch so much stuff for this that I was like, would never otherwise watch. So I think we're going to have to get into this.
With the release of Captain Marvel and the weird backlash around it, we got to thinking about this phenomenon where there's this online backlash every time. It seemed to happen with Wonder Woman. It seemed to happen, well, definitely with Ghostbusters 2016, the Ghostbusters reboot, and The Last Jedi. It just sort of seems to happen over and over again. There's this weird little vocal community online. They use trolling tactics. They get into comment sections. They try to ambush Rotten Tomatoes scores and stuff like that. I thought a good way to approach this would be to start with sort of a little timeline of it as best as I can recall. And maybe if listeners remember stuff that predates what we're talking about, or if we leave stuff out, you guys can let us know.
Yes, please.
For now, this is what I recall. The first time I really became aware of this was when Mad Max Fury Road came out in May 2015. All I really recall from that is that there were a number of geeks and nerds online basically saying, like, this isn't even a Mad Max movie. Mad Max is secondary. He's like a supporting character. It's all about Furiosa. It's some kind of feminist agenda pushing garbage and so forth. Yeah, I mean, as they do. What I thought was really interesting was to learn that the story of Fury Road, the actual plot line, the creator of Mad Max had conceived of it like 20 or 30 years ago. He's been sitting on this story for decades. Oh, so it wasn't he was responding to some pressure from feminists or some shit. He had this idea. He did bring in, I think it was it Eve Ensler? He brought in some prominent feminist.
Whoa, I never knew that.
To consult on it.
Right.
Let me quickly look that up and make sure I'm not misspeaking, but I feel like it is.
Okay, we're going to have to save my extreme hatred of the vagina monologues for another time. We'll talk about that. We're going to get to that another time, I promise.
Yeah, it was Eve Ensler. She consulted on the film to sort of like make sure it had the sort of anti-sexist bona fides or something. So that was interesting. I think what sets Fury Road apart from the other films we're about to talk about is that Fury Road actually did have a feminist agenda.
Mm.
Like, that movie was very overtly about a sexist regime that was enslaving women as sex slaves and this warrior who was trying to free them and, you know, repopulate the earth with greenery.
Right.
You know, where men had destroyed everything, who killed the earth, the whole idea is like the men as being this destructive force. We could have an entire conversation about whether that's actually feminist, what it means to have feminist cinema. I actually wrote a piece about it on bitchflix.com or bitchflix.net. Look it up, bitchflix. But I wrote, like, is Fury Road a feminist film? But that's not really the point.
Right.
The point is more that this sort of tentative discontent that we saw among geeks only grew as more prominent, bigger movies came out with female leads, none of which, you could say, had an overtly feminist agenda.
Yes.
One, of course, was The Force Awakens, which came out that same year, but in December 2015.
Yes.
And there was immediately a backlash, all kinds of YouTube videos and comments to the effect of Rey is a Mary Sue.
Which we've explained before, but let's explain it again for our new listeners.
The Mary Sue, what it's come to mean is a hero who is kind of like a blank slate. That it's a protagonist that has no real personality. They're just a sort of stand-in for the audience, and they're just good at stuff.
Right.
They're just capable, and they're
magically,
the chosen one.
Magically good
for whatever
stuff,
reason.
Right.
And so you see that all the time in movies. Mostly it's a male protagonist who's the quote-unquote Mary Sue. But people had an issue with Rey's apparently mastering force tricks that other Jedis have needed training for, and her ability to fight and defeat Kylo Ren when she had no training, and so on and so forth. So that was a thing. Great. I don't know. Like, there were so many reasons to take issue with The Force Awakens that had nothing to do with that. It actually became, I don't want to say a hobby, but I will say that Matt and I enjoy watching YouTube reviews of movies, especially when it's a movie everyone loved and we didn't like that much, because it's nice to watch someone else be like, yes, let me cite all the things that you're going to agree with. And we're like, yay, we're not alone in the world. But the problem with watching Force Awakens YouTube reviews is that it's like playing Russian roulette, because every other one hates it because of sexism.
Right.
So they start off good and they're like, oh, it's just a remake of Star Wars, it has no originality. You're like, yes, yes. And plus, Rey is a PC Mary Sue pushing her feminist agenda. Okay. And you're like, okay.
With both
stop
of these
this
things,
one.
And this is, I want to just put a pin in this, because as we track this taxonomy, I want to get to some of the things that are said again and again. So we're already locating one that by having the only reason that they would ever think about having a female lead is to be PC. I think that's like the number one, like, female leads or people of color are only there because of Hollywood trying to be PC and pleasing the libs.
Right, that's so profitable.
Because that's so well, first of all, it is. We're going to get to that. But I want to put a pin in that as like one of the sort of things that comes up again and again and again. It reminds me of this thing that my husband told me about, like, lawyers, it was his boss, who's this very famous, his old boss, who's this very famous criminal defense lawyer. And he's like, juries love it when you have a good lawyer who's not a white man. because they're like, oh, it's new, it's different. Like, yeah. I don't know why people immediately are like, it's Hollywood trying to be PC. Maybe it's Hollywood trying to fucking mix it up.
Right, right.
Or take advantage of like the great talents of like a glamazon like Charlize Theron, who's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway.
Sorry. Well, we'll talk about that more. So what's also kind of interesting about Fury Road and The Force Awakens and the Ghostbusters 2016 thing, which I'm about to get into. So the book Ghostbusters 2016 was released in the summer, I believe, of that year. But the backlash against it started as soon as the remake was announced, as early.
Yes.
I'm putting it as early as January 2015. I don't know if it's earlier, but I definitely have myself responding to tweets in January of 2015. Like, one of my favorites was this guy tweeted at Rotten Tomatoes, "Who decided it has to be an all-women cast? I'm sure no one sat around in the 80s and said the original needs to be just men." And that gives me great joy when they sort of self-own that way, when they sort of don't recognize what they're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, like nobody sat around and decided it needed to be just men because it was automatically assumed that whatever you were doing, it was just men.
Yeah.
Anyway, that time period that we're looking at, that sort of pre-release of Fury Road, then The Force Awakens and Ghostbusters, is not quite the tail end of, but just past the high peak of Gamergate. So Gamergate really happened in 2014. Like, there were signs, I would argue, it started as early as 2012. But it really took off in 2014 and became an explosion and a phenomenon online. And by the time of, well, January 2015, it was still going pretty strong. By the time Ghostbusters came out in 2016, it had abated somewhat. I mean, I don't want to minimize what was going on with the people who were still getting really badly harassed, because it still absolutely was happening, but it was past its really big peak of energy. But of course, people will remember that after the release of Ghostbusters, Leslie Jones got hounded off of Twitter.
Yeah.
And that's what ultimately got Milo Yiannopoulos banned from Twitter, because he had spearheaded that whole attack on her. And that was all around the Ghostbusters thing and the resentment over Ghostbusters that. Yeah.
Okay. So then I'm going to put a second pin on that, which is the Gamergate parallel. And we're going to, when we start analyzing all of this, we're going to also think about this in relation to Gamergate.
Yeah, we have to.
Yeah. It's same people.
Yeah, it is. And then, so Wonder Woman, it came out in 2017. And I would say there wasn't like really a huge backlash against the movie. It was a good movie. It's Wonder Woman. She's an absolutely classic, iconic superhero. So what are you going to say? But there was a big to-do about Alamo Drafthouse, a movie theater chain that's based in Texas. They did some women-only screenings. And there was a huge kerfuffle around that, on both online, where like their Facebook page got inundated with all kinds of crap, and also I think somebody tried to sue them over it for discrimination. I know Maya's rolling her eyes like you can't imagine. That was interesting to me in that they couldn't attack the movie really, so they attacked the culture around the movie,
right?
And that's something I kind of want to get into as we go, which is the way that Wonder Woman sort of started to take this role. It started to be held up as some kind of feminist victory, and the need for all women screenings became less of a, hey, it would be really fun to watch this movie only with other women, or maybe there's a woman who's not comfortable with men and now she'll get to see it, and became more of this like, we need to have safe spaces,
right?
As if we were talking about a consciousness raising session and not a Hollywood superhero movie.
Yes, yes. We're going to get to that. So that's another pin we're putting in.
Absolutely.
Feminists' role in weirdly perpetuating this discourse.
Yep. And then in the same year, Last Jedi came out. And again, that was one of the most sort of divisive in terms of really generating strong, strong feelings on both sides, so to speak. I don't like to put it that way because I don't think it's like that there's two sides to this, but
right.
There kind of is in the minds of the people involved. There was tons of backlash against Last Jedi. It was like The Force Awakens on steroids. It was whatever made these geeks uncomfortable about that. It was a million times more for this because you had Admiral Holdo in a decision-making role. And, oh, you had Rose Tico, the new character played by Kelly Marie Tran. And I don't know, this like made people super upset.
And she was harassed off the internet.
Exactly. She was harassed off Instagram for at least a time, which was disgusting. Like, it was really awful. It was similar to what happened to Leslie Jones, although I do think less directly coordinated by one individual targeting her. It was more sort of like an organic, oh, we know what to do now. We've been through this before. But what really kind of drives me nuts about that, aside from the obvious horribleness, is that it made it so that there wasn't a lot of space, and there still isn't a lot of space, to talk about The Last Jedi is in terms of whether it is actually a good movie or not. I mean, we talked about it. We did a whole episode. We did not like it at all. But whereas you have geeks who are rejecting it outright because of its political correctness, on the other side of that, you have people who like it, who dismiss any criticism of it as being motivated by sexism and racism and anti-political correctness. And neither one of those needs to be true.
That's right. That's right. But it does narrow the discourse. But we'll get to that. Yes. We'll get to that. So next, we had a remake on Netflix of She-Ra,
yes,
Princess of Power, which was She-Ra, the Princesses of Power and the something something. And I remember the same kind of outcry when they released the image of what the new She-Ra would look like. Uh-huh. Because the new She-Ra, the animation style is much more like, has much more of an anime manga language to it.
Exactly. It's very anime-inspired.
It's very anime-inspired, and the showrunner and the sort of designer of it is this lesbian comic book artist who's sort of very playful, like the different characters have all different body types. Like Glimmer or whatever has like some thick thighs, you know what I mean? Yeah. And then She-Ra herself is not this very booby, voluptuous character. She's like a 14-year-old badass. Mm-hmm. Like there's a way in which she's drawn where she's very desexualized.
Yeah, she's sort of flat-chested and
athletic. Her skin isn't as exposed. She's not wearing low-cut, high-cut. Like
there's like shorts under her skin.
Yeah, she's almost wearing like biker. And it's still this very, in some ways, much eerier creature because to show like power in the form of this very adolescent.
Yeah, well, it's very Japanese too.
Yeah.
In the tradition of like Sailor Moon and a lot of magical girl stories.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But so you're like, okay, cool. Like whatever. Boy geeks went apeshit over this. Yeah. It was so weird. It was so weird.
Yeah. And the cartoonist that you're talking about is Noelle Stevenson of Nimona and Lumberjanes. She's really great. She's wonderful. Does great work. And yeah, the weird thing about the She-Ra backlash, which fucking drives me nuts, is that those people did not watch She-Ra as kids.
Right.
They may have watched He-Man, but come on. I watched She-Ra. That was for girls. Like, I'm not sure there were boys who watched it. I don't want to be like
but it was literally marketing people being like, let's make He-Man, but for girls. That's literally what
exactly
they were like. We want to sell more plastic shit, but also to girls. So let's make a sister show that is about girls. And also, I went back and watched the original She-Ra in preparation for this. It is unwatchable. Like, how can you be so invested in an unwatchable show from your childhood?
So I think that's something we should put a pin into, which is this nostalgia thing. This idea that remakes, reboots, or sequels are damaging to something treasured from your childhood, and things need to stay the way they were when you were a child. It's interesting. And I'd like to get into that.
I know what it is when sometimes they do a remake of something that's so good. And you're like, why do you need to do this? You're like, this is pointless. But if you go back and you look at She-Ra, you're like, you know what? This isn't some like gorgeous, ideal thing that cannot be. This is not some goblet that cannot be touched. Like, it fucking sucks, kind of. Yeah. So like,
No, I'm with you. But I do want to get into that more and think about what we're seeing there, what that phenomenon is. And so finally, that brings us to the most recent iteration, which is the Captain Marvel movie, which is doing gangbusters, the box office. It's killing it. So I guess maybe that debate is over. But there was a huge amount of annoyance in those corners, those same corners of the internet, the same
dark,
rabbit holes of YouTube.
Slimy corners of the internet.
Especially because Brie Larson has been vocal about her interest in creating more diversity. She, I guess she made some comment at some event. I don't even know what it was, but I've only ever seen the clip of it. But she was talking about the need for more diversity among film critics.
Right.
That we don't need to have only white male film critics. And she said something like, I don't care what some 50-year-old white man has to say about A Wrinkle in Time. And that clip, that little one line got circulated and it just blew up as this, like, she's reverse sexist. She hates white men. She doesn't want white men to be movie critics. This is all part of an agenda. And she leans into it. And to be fair, I want to say she puts her money where her mouth is in a lot of ways. Like, she's worked with groups to make sure there's diversity among the journalists who are being invited to the press junkets for Captain Marvel, which I
awesome.
Applaud. That's fantastic. But it makes it so easy for them to cast her this way, especially because when people tweet at Netflix, she has a movie out on Netflix now saying, why are you supporting this sexist woman or whatever, she'll retweet it and snap back, clap back. And she leans into that. And like, that's fine. But in its way, it feeds the beast and it makes them hate her even more and think that they're really onto something in terms of having uncovered this conspiracy to destroy white men and shove feminism down America's collective throat.
Mm, if they only knew how much I just, my throat is just open for feminism.
I know, right?
I'm just like ready to drink it. And you know, like, and as a member of like 52% of the population, I mean, I'm sorry. There are a lot of people who are very thirsty for feminism. We're thirsty for it, man. I don't know why they have to get in the way of my thirst. Wait, quickly. Did you see Captain Marvel?
I did.
Is it good?
It's fine.
Is it in the top half of Marvel movies?
Yeah. I mean, I'd have to look at my list where I've graded all of them and ranked them, but...
Do you actually have such a list?
I do. I haven't actually updated it since Infinity War, I think.
Okay.
And I definitely haven't put Captain Marvel on it. I definitely liked it better than Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay.
It's good. Like, it's an entertaining movie. It has certain shortcomings that are less like problems where you're like, oh, that's not good. And more like the script needed another pass or two. It just needed to take a few ideas that it had a little bit further. The main thing is the character development. They miss out on a real opportunity to give Carol Danvers a good arc. Her arc is kind of meh and uninspiring.
But how is Brie?
She's great. I thought she was great. I liked her and I liked her character, the way they realized her. She sort of had a snarky sense of humor. She was a little bit of a smartass, but in a different way from Tony Stark and, say, Doctor Strange, who were also smartasses. Like, she had her own take on it. She felt to me like a real character that I could relate to. I liked her a lot. Her performance was fine. Samuel Jackson and she had fine chemistry. Everyone loved the cat. The cat was great. I don't want to give spoilers if you haven't seen it, because I would like you to see it. But I'll just say it rested a lot on this, like, isn't this funny? It's the 90s, which I didn't mind. I got a kick out of the jokes there. But it rested a lot on the soundtrack. Oh, we're going to play I'm Just a Girl. Like, okay, you know, that's fine. I don't mind a very, very on-the-nose musical cue like that. But I would like it better if it were backed up by a little more to grab onto, just in terms of depth, in terms of actually giving her an arc and giving the whole plot line a little more time to develop. But I recognize that they were in a bind with it because they're trying to create this character who's going to, the whole Marvel Universe is going to rest on for the next bunch of movies. So they're creating this big character, this extremely powerful character. She's tied with Thor to be the most powerful Avenger, basically. And if you're going to make a movie about a character like that, the movie should feel epic. It should feel big and like a real event. And to me, it felt like a cute, sweet little movie that was nice and entertaining to watch. But it didn't seem to match the impact of the events. You're like, wow, these events are incredibly impactful in this universe. And yet this movie doesn't have the epicness that should go with that.
But you know, that was my feeling about Thor Ragnarok. I think at this point, we've had these kind of events so many times in these movies that like, they are losing their stakes. Like they are losing their power with every iteration. Yeah. Like, I don't know how you can reboot to reinscribe true stakes, because we all know, including the characters and the actors, that there's just going to be another movie.
Right, right, right.
Like, you have to really feel like it's the last, like, and you
That's
can't.
Why Infinity War was so fucking good, because, like, the stakes really felt real. And you would never think that after all these movies and bringing together all these characters into one movie that it could ever work. And it really does.
Right.
So, long story short, too late. It was fine. It was fine. Captain Marvel was fine. It wasn't great. It wasn't amazing. It didn't knock my socks off, but it wasn't bad. It didn't bore me.
Okay.
So what's going on here? What is going on with these dudes and this repeated cycle of trying to create a battlefield for the culture war around these female-led films and TV shows?
Well, it's not just female-led films and TV shows. It's female-led films and TV shows that are in mass culture.
Yes, yes, yes. But even more so, I would say it's specifically geek mass culture.
Yes.
Because
yes.
You had, I don't know, you have like Ocean's 8, where they took the Ocean's 11 premise and made it women, and nobody really cared.
Right.
And that's a pretty big movie with huge stars, but it didn't have that same kind of impact that these geek movies have. And I think part of that is just the possessiveness that fans of this type of material have over this type of material. You know, if you take out the element of sexism and racism and all that stuff for a moment, you could replace it with any number of changes or additions you could make to the world of geek culture that would piss off somebody, because everyone's so possessive.
Well, this is what I remember about, I went to Comic-Con with my friend Douglas Wolk. We should have Douglas on the show. He is like the Pauline Kael of comics.
Oh, wow.
He's like, he is so good. But I remember that people, they would get so het up about how in the new version of whatever, they didn't stick to the before you get to the sexism and the racism and whatever, you already are starting. It's like the character in The Simpsons. It's like The Simpsons,
yeah, comic,
like,
book,
comic
guy.
Book
yeah,
owner.
Comic book guy.
Yeah. I think part of what comics do is in their repetitiveness and iterativeness, they are trying to inspire that kind of ownership among their readers. Mm-hmm. And it works. And sometimes it works a little too well.
So you're already starting from that place, which is a recipe for a lot of ire among overly possessive fans. But then you put into the mix these other elements that we should talk about. And I don't think you can talk about it without addressing Gamergate a little bit. We've already talked somewhat about it, I think, on the show.
I don't think we've ever really gotten into Gamergate, actually.
Not. It's so connected to the alt-right in its way that to me, it's always there. Like, it all goes back to Gamergate. It always all goes back to Gamergate. And I do think that there was a phenomenon happening there that we maybe weren't aware of at the time.
First of all, just for some of our listeners who weren't as up in it, could you give like
a little primer, quick primer?
Yeah.
So
the quickest
I can summarize Gamergate is, in the summer of 2014, a indie game developer, her ex-boyfriend very angrily went onto the 4chan, the horrible forums where geeks try to one-up each other with how horrible they can be, and spread a bunch of lies about her and said that she had cheated on him with game reviewers. And this exploded into a quote-unquote movement for ethics in gaming journalism, is how they put it. But what it really was an excuse to very, very viciously harass women in gaming and geek culture generally. And the biggest targets of it were Zoe Quinn, the game developer I just mentioned, and Anita Sarkeesian of Feminist Frequency, because right around the same time or just prior to that, she had done her Tropes Against Women in Gaming or in Video Games series, which was a series of videos analyzing the portrayal of women in video games.
Which was awesome, by the way. Yeah, I recommend it to everyone.
Absolutely. And it started with her Kickstarter for that. The moment she announced that she was going to be doing a video series about video games, she got attacked. And so then when the thing happened with Zoe Quinn, it just exploded into this phenomenon. To me, in retrospect, what I see is the same thing you see when there's some kind of like mass shooting and you look at the perpetrator's history and you go, oh shit, he had this many domestic violence arrests, or he had been abusive to his wife or girlfriend. And there's this obvious repeated pattern where violent men sort of start off by abusing the women in their lives because they're nearby and because they're vulnerable before they move on to more escalated violence that's more outside the home.
Yes.
And to me, that's what Gamergate is. It was like the alt-right testing the waters on people who were nearby because they were involved in these geek spaces and who were vulnerable because they were women in these spaces. And not just women. I mean, they attacked people of color and LGBT people as well, particularly trans people. But the most visible targets were typically women.
And I want to say, like, Anita Sarkeesian, she gives a lot of talks. She is this very interesting academic and thinker and writer. And she would have to, like, cancel lectures she was giving at colleges because credible death threats would be made in advance of her speaking.
Yeah.
So this isn't just, like, harassment online, which, by the way, is bad enough. There was doxing. There were people were like not living in their
they
homes.
They do a thing called swatting where they call the police and make like false claims about illegal activity you're doing to try to get them to send a SWAT team to your house.
Yes. And also to try to, especially with people of color, to try to get the police to fucking shoot you.
Yeah.
Like that's, they're doing that purposefully. It's brutal. Yeah. It's brutal. Yeah.
So that was Gamergate. And it really had its peak in that 2014-2015 time, and then it sort of slowly petered out and was overtaken basically by Trumpism and the alt-right.
That's right.
There is the appendage called Comicsgate, which is, I think I described it to you as like a little deformed limb that never quite completely grew in off of Gamergate, but it's just sort of hanging there. And they're sort of still around. There's not that many of them, but I don't want to... Again, you don't want to belittle it because from my point of view, it's like, who are these fuckers? But if you're one of the young women who's an editor at Marvel that got targeted by them for harassment, it is a big fucking deal because that's...
Yeah.
It's not just like a few people calling you a bitch online. It's like constant, targeted, overwhelming. They start multiple accounts and they dogpile you and it makes it impossible to have an online existence, which when that's your career, when that's crucial to your career, makes life really difficult. It's a mess. And I think there's no question that what we've seen with Star Wars and Ghostbusters clearly grew out of that. I mean, Milo Yiannopoulos was a big figure in Gamergate, and he, as soon as he saw that it was happening, jumped on it and sort of made himself one of their self-styled leaders. And totally. He was responsible for the Leslie Jones thing.
It's interesting because I was just thinking as you were talking just now, like about Leslie Jones, who has a huge following on Twitter, right? And this is a place where people will literally like just go watch Leslie Jones live tweet Game of Thrones, right? And it all of a sudden I'm thinking about the ways that in the South post-Civil War, the way that people were like terrorized to make their spaces feel unsafe. If right now we're interacting with each other online, like that's what they're doing. They're trying to make people feel so unsafe there and so unwelcome there that they're just going to get off that space entirely and that voice is going to be shut down.
Exactly.
And it is online space there. It's not as direct. Your physical being is not as directly potentially under harm. Although again, a lot of these people have credible death threats and, mm-hmm. and they get swatted or whatever. But it is this harassment designed to make you feel unsafe in engaging in public space. And one of the things, going back to the sort of other pin, that the first pin that we put in, this idea that women leads or people of color or women of color are only in a big Hollywood action movie because Hollywood is trying to be PC. Hollywood is trying to please the libs by being all diverse.
Right.
It's so weird to me because there are these vast pools of talents. There are these right. whole worlds. Like, who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want to just engage in the unbelievable charm of Kelly Tran, who is like unbelievably sparkling right. and joy to watch? Like, why is this feeling that by being diverse, you're taking something away from us, as opposed to we're starting to open up the world so that we get to enjoy some of these undeniably luminous talents, or right. we're creating a science fiction world that is multiracial. Like, that's part of it. These are science fiction worlds, right? These are like unreal worlds. What is so threatening about having a science fiction world be multiracial? What is that about? I thought that was the whole thing about Star Trek The Next Generation. It's like, we are creating a multiracial, like, yeah. harmonium. Well, like, what's going on?
One of the most hilarious things I've seen in this field over the past few years is people complaining about the new Star Trek series in this vein, being like, it's so PC, it's all, and it's like, you have never watched Star Trek. Like, that's what's like, yeah. what the fuck are you talking about? You're showing your ass, because you can't possibly be a Star Trek fan and think it's not supposed to be politically correct. Like, that's the whole point of the exercise.
Right. It's like a liberal, we've talked about this when we were talking about, we have, by the way, a great two-part episode. We were talking about what is giving us comfort in these Trump times, right. and the number of people who are like, I'm rewatching the entire Star Trek The Next Generation. Yeah. And we connected that to the West Wing. Yeah. Like, that's exactly what Star Trek is and has always been. It's like a multiracial Fantasia future. It is the future liberals want.
100%.
It always has been from the beginning.
That is literally what it is. Yeah, this whole thing with science fiction worlds, also fantasy worlds. You know, if you say there should be more diversity in, say, your adaptation of Tolkien, it's right. like, there's no such thing as black elves. Like, really? First of all, find me the passage in Tolkien where he says that. But second of all, even if you can, who fucking cares? It's a fantasy world. It can be whatever the fuck right. you want. I had this conversation right. about Game of Thrones a lot, because Game of Thrones has some problematic race stuff going on a little bit.
Yeah.
From the first season, I remember noting, like, oh, isn't it interesting how all the Westeros people are white and, like, the Dothraki are kind of dusky and of different races, and the Dothraki right. are these, like, savages. And
swarthy.
They're swarthy.
Swarthy savages.
And it's, you know, just seems a little bit, and people will say, well, he based it, you know, George R. R. Martin based it on history, so it's, they're supposed to be stand-ins for the Mongols. You're like, okay, but they're not the Mongols. Like, I get that they're based on that, but they can be based on that. But in this world, all the Europeans are black and all the Mongols are something else. Like, you can do it however you want. It's a fucking fantasy story.
And so you have to say, like, why are you so invested in this? But it also is this thing where it's anchored in, like, Hollywood and those libs in Hollywood. And I think a lot of this was happening at the same time this happens every presidential election year. And we're going to see a new round of it where it's like, why is Hollywood, why are all the storytellers, like, why are they all populated with liberals? And part of it is like, hey, guys, Hollywood is 99% white male sexual harasser. Yeah. So don't worry about it.
Yeah,
don't worry about
it,
guys.
Anywhere. They're fine. But that's another place where they kind of show their ass, because they will often say that Hollywood is making these decisions based on some political pressure or desire to push a political agenda, when they should give audiences what they really want instead. And it's like, that's not at all how any of this works. I don't, whether you're talking about comic books or movies or whatever, they are trying to sell a product. They are trying to move product and make money. They couldn't care less what agenda they're pushing. And the idea that Hollywood studios would spend millions, tens of millions, hundreds of million dollars to make a movie.
To please the liberal agenda.
Yeah, to push some kind of agenda. No, they do the safest thing they can do because they want to make that money back at least. You know, it's rare enough for a movie to be profitable at all.
And so that's the thing that I want to get to. So maybe the anxiety is that we're living in a changing racial reality in this country.
Yes.
Because, I mean, Black Panther made a bajillion dollars and they want to make that money again. And it won Oscars and it like did all those things because it was the best work that year, because those were the best, most brilliant, inventive costumes that year, because they were like, and people paid for those tickets, and people maybe want to see women who are heroes,
right,
and they want to see people of color on the screen, and they're bored with an all-white world because that's not what our world looks like in this country anymore.
Exactly.
And where you also see that being so strange is that they get so invested in these treasures of their childhood. Like when all of these men got so angry about Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. I'm like, you're grown ass men. I watched the original Ghostbusters a few years ago because I thought it was going to be so great. And I was like, oh, wow, I really enjoyed this movie because I was a child. Like there's still things that are kind of charming about it, but it's not a great movie. A lot of it has not aged so well. Like, why are you so anchored in these treasures of your childhood that were themselves just money-making machines?
Yeah.
That's all they were then. They weren't anything special then.
Okay, so I think I like the original Ghostbusters more than you do. And I can't say how much of that is maybe me being biased by my nostalgia for it. I do recognize that some of the stuff really doesn't hold up. But
yeah,
I think that like the pacing of it and the timing and the humor and the comedic performances are really good. I love it. I love the special effects. It's just a really tight, tight script.
Yes.
It goes from plot point to plot point at this really great pace. And the pacing within each scene, the editing is great, like really maximizes the comic effect.
You know what else it is that I really missed in the new one? Because I want to take a second to talk about the new one. Can we just take 1 second? Because I went back and I watched Ghostbusters 2016. Bill Murray's character, all of the four Ghostbusters had very well-drawn characters. Mm-hmm. And it was such a New York movie.
Oh, absolutely.
And there was a way where it was like, we're going to get the funniest people to just be fucking funny. And I felt like this new one with the ladies, it's not that the problem is the ladies. These are all brilliant ladies.
Very funny.
Who I am very passionate about. But I actually thought it was trying too hard. In some ways, I thought it was trying to be too good of a movie, because I feel like Ghostbusters wasn't trying to make sure that like it was cohesive as a script. It was like set pieces for these brilliant comedians to be fucking funny.
That's true.
And I felt like there could have been more room for these people to be fucking funny.
I thought so too, but I didn't watch all of Ghostbusters 2016. I started it and I got through about 15 minutes of it before I had to stop, not because I didn't like it, but it was getting late and I never got a chance to watch the rest. But I'm not in any big rush to, I'll be honest. Like that first 15 minutes had some moments that made me chuckle. Like there was some humor there. I did feel like Paul Feig's style of comedy didn't match the material. That was my big feeling about it. The type of humor he was doing, which is kind of that like Apatow style, like in Bridesmaids, there's like banter that's sort of, it's not like set up and punchline and funny lines. It's like they kind of like mutter things to each other.
It's awkwardness. And but I loved Spy. I fucking love Spy.
I'm not saying I don't enjoy that kind of comedy. I really do. But I don't think it matched the Ghostbusters material.
I don't think
so either. It just wasn't a fit. And I think of like that opening scene in Ghostbusters where they see the ghost in the library. And like, first of all, you're starting at the New York Public Library. The city is a character in the movie. And you're put right there with all of the implications and connotations of this old fucking library. And in this remake, they start at some made-up historical house. Like, oh, that's fine.
But also, I actually thought that the monologue that he gives when he's touring it was probably the best writing of the movie.
I thought it was fucking hilarious.
It was fucking hilarious. Where they're like, and they had a all kinds of things that rich people had, like an anti-Irish fence. And you're like, oh, it's so good. Like, that was the peak writing. Peak
but they were all like kind of like those throwaway lines, almost like in a Simpsons episode where they just say a thing offhand and you're like, oh my God, that was hilarious. And it was great. And I was like, oh, this is pretty promising. But the scene where they encounter the ghost for the first time, instead of letting the editing do the pacing and let you sort of just enjoy the humor of their reaction to the ghost, as the first movie does, they're this like, it'll be really funny to watch a prolonged take of the ghost spitting ectoplasm in Kristen Wiig's face.
Right.
And you're like, that's not actually funny.
Right.
That's not funny. You're not leaning into what is funny about this movie. And you are trying to create humor out of things that aren't very funny. And it didn't work completely. I'm not saying it was bad.
I'm not saying it was bad. I'm saying that it was almost like, you know when you see something mediocre and it's almost worse? Because it was like trying to play it safe.
Yeah.
I love these women so much. And I feel like the way that all four of these women are as like stars of comedy is because at their peak, they don't play it safe.
Yeah.
And I thought that there was the whole movie was playing it so safe. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't have. It didn't need to. But it was. It was like very safe, very careful. And I feel like I could watch those four women just be fucking funny together. Like, why would I still ever watch Saturday Night Live? You know it's that you're watching it for Leslie Jones. Like, she's fucking amazing.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel similarly about the 15 minutes that I watched of it. But yeah, you know, at some point, I'll probably watch it.
But anyway, but apart from that, okay, so that's our feelings about Ghostbusters, but that's not about like them being women. That's about the sort of reverence that they're treating with the material so you don't take advantage of how fucking funny they are. Meanwhile, these trolls are like, you are destroying our childhood by having the four funniest women currently in American comedy, some of the funniest people in American comedy, be the Ghostbusters. And it's like, they're so personally offended by the idea of an all-female team.
Well, this nostalgia thing, or this fake nostalgia, because I still insist that none of these people watched She-Ra, because number one, they wouldn't be talking about how good it was. And number two, I don't think they watched She-Ra. They were boys. They didn't watch She-Ra. They don't have strong feelings. They've seen pictures of sexy 80s She-Ra, and they are really miffed by the idea that anyone would redesign She-Ra to not be as sexy to them. And I think a lot of it is just, you know, when I was a kid in the 80s and I was watching these shows, we were on top. Men were on top. I was a boy and the world was my fucking oyster. And now you're telling me that other people are invited into the oyster and you're ruining my childhood. I feel like what they're really saying is you're ruining my male privilege that I was raised to believe I would always have.
Yes. I just want to mention, there was this recent, I'm a huge fan of Steven Soderbergh, guys, who is like peak white male, but I'm still a big fan of him. Yeah, I know. It's deeply problematic. But I want to talk about this one interview that he just did recently where he was talking about making movies and blah, blah, blah. And he talks about Mad Max Fury Road.
Okay.
And he says, I just watched Mad Max Fury Road again last week. And I tell you, I couldn't direct 30 seconds of that. I don't understand how George Miller does that. I really don't. And it's my job to understand it. I don't understand how they're not still shooting that film. And I don't understand how hundreds of people aren't dead. Most of the action was done without CGI.
Yeah.
And you have practical effects. Literally the greatest director in American cinema being like, that is the greatest fucking movie. And you're like, what's wrong? Why aren't you willing to enjoy how fucking great this is over some stupid shit? You have the greatest director in America being like, Mad Max Fury Road is so great, I don't even know how he did that shit.
Yep.
I can't even understand in my mind how he made those fucking shots. Charlize Theron is a fucking queen goddess of all time. Mm-hmm. What is your problem? Right. Enjoy the shit.
Just enjoy things. Just fucking enjoy them. If you don't like them, you don't have to like them. That's fine too. Who fucking cares? They created this narrative that what's ruining these movies is the presence of women and people of color. And that suits them to believe that. They want to believe that. It's not so much that they hate seeing women in lead roles. And it's not so much that they hate seeing geek properties that they love changed in some way. Both of those things are true. But it's like the sum being the whole being more than the sum of its parts when those two things come together.
Totally.
And it just becomes a locus. It becomes this thing on which they can focus this anxiety that they are living with about their obsolescence in the world.
Okay, so we're seeing these people who are nostalgic. They're saying it about the memories of their childhood are being destroyed. These remakes and reboots and women showing up, they're damaging something very treasured about their childhood, which is like, did you watch the original? It sucked.
Yeah.
What you're saying is it's damaging the memories of a time when you thought it was never going to be any other way.
Basically, right?
That you were going to be always in charge and on top. The question is, why are feminists engaging with this shit? Because to me, I'm kind of like, I see this shit and I'm like, this is the little corners of the internet where the cheesy, stupid boys who really cannot confront their shit are. And the thing is, when people's actual lives are being threatened or people are being harassed off social media platforms, then it is absolutely time to say something. But otherwise, I think feminists are engaging with it online in a way that they're letting them set the terms of the conversation.
I agree.
And that is not...
No, it's not good. It's seriously problematic, in fact, in that you lose sight of what feminism is and what is the long-range goal here.
Yes.
Feminism is a social justice movement. Feminism is not the fight for more women superhero movies. It's yes. Not. Now, I understand how that fits into the big picture of things. And I understand that if we have female-led films and they do well at the box office, then studios will make more of them. And that will be good because we want there to be more female-led films. We want young girls to grow up in a world where they can see themselves in all kinds of heroic roles and doing all kinds of things. And right now, they really can't because still, even with these movies we've mentioned, it's pretty few and far between for women to really be the leads in films. So, yes. Particularly Hollywood films. So, yes, representation is important and getting diverse voices behind the camera are very important. Possibly even more important because that's, you know, who's telling the stories and all that is true.
Yes.
But when that gets distilled into like, we're so excited about the new Ghostbusters reboot. This is a big moment for feminism. Look at all these little girls in their Ghostbusters outfit looking up to the women. This is so big. This movie has to do well because if it doesn't do well, it proves all these trolls right. You don't have to go there. This movie is a studio movie by a cynical, money-making, profit-driven entity that has no other agenda than to take your money.
Right. And so the same reason that it's dumb that the geeks are using this to perform their anxiety about whiteness, which is like, why do you give a shit if this new She-Ra looks like a 14-year-old girl and has more of a manga? It's almost like at least National Socialism is an ethos. Like at least it has like a visual language it's referencing, which is Sailor Moon and manga. Like, come on. But for the same reason that it's so dumb that these geeks are using this as a performance, it's so dumb to connect with it.
I agree.
Ghostbusters 2016 kind of sucked and Fury Road was great. And we didn't really go for The Last Jedi. It kind of sucked because of what they are as movies.
Yeah, exactly.
And whether these are men or female characters, like I don't see like Wonder Woman as some like feminist heroism. I think that it's really awesome that there was a woman director.
Yes.
I think it's interesting that when Patty Jenkins directs, the costumes, while still form fitting, are a lot less booby.
Yeah.
And
they
the
look
Amazons
like actual
tend
armor.
To be, the Amazons tend to be scarred and fucking tough. They're still sexy as shit, though.
Yeah.
But it's that thing where you're like, at the end of the day, I'm not going to put my energy as a feminist into being a stan for Wonder Woman or Captain Marvel or She-Ra or Ghostbusters, because I actually don't think it's moving the ball forward in a deeply meaningful way about feminism. I think it's entertainment. Entertainment is already going to have all of this sexism to it. Any of the little changes to it, it's like tomato, tomato. It's minor to me.
Yeah.
It's minor. I don't think Black Panther ultimately, as big of a cultural deal as it was, I'm not going to say like Black Panther is going to be the document that makes America stop having a race problem.
Right.
I don't think it's going to happen through
Black
Panther.
I don't think it
Black
even,
Panther's
it doesn't even really move the needle. Again, I think when you see little kids at conventions dressed up as Black Panther, you see a little black girl dressed as Shuri, that's like, that's really great. And I am so glad they have that. And that's a big important change. And I don't want to downplay that for what it is.
No.
But there's also a way like, okay, so after Wonder Woman came out, people were talking about the script by Joss Whedon for Wonder Woman that he never produced, but he had been hired to do a Wonder Woman film. It fell through in the end. The script was circulating. And people, I remember the Mary Sue, which is a geek girl website, and they did a whole article about how ridiculous it was that Joss Whedon was standing by his sexist Wonder Woman script and saying it was good when it's so sexist. I read that script. It was pretty good. It really wasn't that bad. It had a couple things in it that weren't good. Like, it definitely had a couple of characters calling Wonder Woman a whore, where I'm more like, that's definitely a slur against sex workers and doesn't need to be in there. But I get what you're trying to do. And there were some serious problems with race in it that definitely needed to be addressed. But in terms of sexism, it was no more or less sexist than Patty Jenkins' movie. It was, in structure, a really similar movie.
Yeah.
And Patty Jenkins did a bunch of stuff like making Diana be an instrument of war in a war that did not have good guys or bad guys. So there was no moral reason for her to be killing people in that war or fighting people in that war. She had Diana not save the day. The guy saves the day. Steve Trevor, right? He saves everyone while she goes through this cute arc of personal growth, which was moving and lovely because she learns that love is really important and all that. It's good. But who saves everybody's ass? It's the guy. I didn't see how that was any better than what Joss Whedon had written, honestly. But people had built it up in their minds and in the discourse like this was a feminist triumph, this movie. And I'll grant you, the first 45 minutes on Lesbian Island were like, okay, I've not seen that in a movie before. Like, that was good.
That was pretty
great. But beyond that, like, come on, it was a superhero.
Pinning feminism on a corporate profit-driven project, it's sort of like when people talk about, like, corporations saying their stuff is environmental and they call it greenwashing.
Yeah.
You put one woman of color in a Star Wars movie.
Right.
You're not winning. Dude,
yeah.
You're not winning. You're trying to do the least that you can do to create a more interesting world.
Exactly.
And I see that in so many of these movies where they're like, they're just trying to find the dollars. I'm not pinning feminism on that.
Right. You can't. And this isn't some brand new thing. We grew up with Ripley and Sarah Connor. There were geek properties, really big, huge blockbuster movies with female leads, the same nature. They have existed our whole life. They've never been the dominant form. They've never been the majority, but they've been out there. So it's not like...
And they've been just as iconic, if not more so, as anything else. They were not like sideways things, like Alien, Sarah Connor's. Like, these were icons of our life and icons of your life, geek boys.
Exactly.
This is nothing sort of new. So what's going on with that fantasy? Are we just trolling again? I think we might be just trolling.
I think
again.
What it comes down to is that in this online world that we now all live in, if your take is, hey, Captain Marvel was okay, no one's going to click on that shit. If your title, your headline is Captain Marvel was a feminist victory and is going to change the landscape of superhero movies, then people are going to click. And if your headline is the opposite, it's feminist agenda crap, people are going to click. You have to have an extreme view one way or the other, and it turns the conversation into garbage.
Yep. We are anti-garbage.
Okay, so we have to add one final addendum, one last thing to this episode.
Seriously important, yes.
Between the time when we recorded the rest of this episode and now, an interesting thing happened, which was that Game of Thrones Battle of Winterfell episode aired, and spoiler alert if you haven't seen that episode and are going to, but let's say that like Arya did something really cool. And subsequently, the term Mary Sue was trending on Twitter for like a whole day.
Oh, Jesus.
And I really wanted to address that because it really relates to what we've been talking about in regard to this resistance against women being leads and doing awesome things in geek-centered pop culture.
Okay, so we've discussed this when it came to Star Wars, The Last Jedi. A Mary Sue is a term for a female character who's sort of magically good at things for no reason and gets to be magically good at things, which, first of all, when male characters do that, they just get to be called heroes and we just go with it.
Yeah, exactly. And this character is kind of not well developed, not really a fully fledged character, but doesn't have flaws and just gets everything right and can do everything. The thing is, as many people pointed out on Twitter, Arya is the furthest thing from that. She's not magically good at things. In fact, she has spent the entirety of whatever, how many seasons has this show been?
Okay.
Eight seasons?
Okay. She spent this, we are on the eighth season.
Yeah.
She has spent seven seasons training to be a master assassin. In fact, this week, in response to this, I went back to the first season of Game of Thrones.
Yes.
The first season in which she's a tomboy. And by episode 3 of the first season, her father gets her a sword fighting master.
Yes.
What do we say to the god of death? Not today.
Not today.
Episode 3 of the first motherfucking season. She has been beat up, blinded, restored to sight, trained as an assassin, killed people of anyone on this show. Of anyone on this show in terms of her arc. She has had a huge arc that is all about turning her from this tomboy into a master killer.
Right.
That's been her whole story.
Right. And she also is not without flaws. She's a very flawed character, and she lives in a very morally gray area. So the idea that she's just perfect and has no flaws and does everything right is preposterous. She's made many mistakes, and she's had failures, and she has had all kinds of training to justify her ability to do what she does.
And in fact, one of her flaws is actually all of these brutal years have made her somewhat cold.
Oh, yeah.
And scary.
Yes. I mean, arguably, she's morally malformed. She no longer has a correctly functioning moral compass. So I appreciate that people wanted to correct this weird idea. But I feel like the correct response to that isn't actually to argue about why she's not and how she doesn't fit that bill, but rather to point out the stupidity of the very idea of the Mary Sue. Like, is Jon Snow not a Mary Sue? Like, what has he ever done right? What, I mean, no, he's done a lot of things right, but I mean to say, like, what makes him so special that he's made the head of the Night's Watch? He just has a natural flair for battle tactics and winning the trust of his men and all the good things that a good leader is supposed to do. I mean, I can sort of go ahead and say he was raised by Ned Stark and Ned Stark taught him good stuff and everything, but like, that's not enough. He's a Mary Sue. 100%.
Yeah.
And it, as you said, all male heroes are. It's like the standard thing. From Luke Skywalker to Harry Potter to whoever, the chosen one is that character. They're just sort of there to be this avatar that your audience can identify with and put themselves in this place in this power fantasy. That's all
right.
It is.
That's
but
right.
When you put a woman or a girl in that place, certain people start to notice that and get upset by it.
Right. Right.
And in clicking the hashtag, I also noticed people saying that Captain Marvel is a Mary Sue.
Right.
Which is an argument you could kind of make in that she is underdeveloped as a character. She doesn't
right.
have a great arc. She doesn't have a huge number of flaws. And she's overpowered.
Yeah.
But she's no more a Mary Sue than Captain America.
Well, and I think that what it comes down to is, and we've seen this a lot, is this idea that men are supposed to be heroes.
Yes.
And women are not supposed to be heroes. All of these ways that we've naturalized these kind of sexist and misogynist tropes, when they're not natural, it stresses us out. We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
It doesn't stress me out, but you know what I mean.
It's this really visible manifestation of the discomfort that some people have when women in fiction are allowed to do the things that men in fiction have always been allowed to do.
Because so much of fiction is wish fulfillment.
Yes.
So the wish fulfillment is when you are called upon to be the hero, somehow you will find the strength, you will have the skills, you will, if you don't have them, you will acquire them, you will develop your natural talents to be able to get to them, whatever. We are so used to seeing that wish fulfillment in men, in male characters, that it's become naturalized to them. We believe that that's what naturally it is. It's all fantasy, guys.
Exactly.
And we're just uncomfortable with that fantasy. Why?
I mean, you know why.
Well, I know why. I'm just saying.
Actually, I want to share a tweet. My friend Jesse Sharon on Twitter said, "Mary Sue just means girl power fantasy that doesn't appeal to me personally."
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that tweet specifically because she wasn't saying, you know, Arya's not a Mary Sue because, or Captain Marvel's not a Mary Sue because. She was saying, so the fuck what if they are a power fantasy? Girl power fantasies are fine. Boy power fantasies
right.
have always been fine.
That's right.
Like, just because it doesn't tickle your fantasy bone to see a woman do something cool doesn't mean there's something wrong with a power fantasy in your fantasy superhero fiction.
Yes. Yes. That's right. How drunk are you? What's your drunkometer?
Oh, I am like a 3. I haven't even finished my first Bloody Mary. And it will also be my last. I'm sorry, listeners, if you feel like I've let you down, but I did drink. How about you?
Well, I'm about to have to take care of my daughter, and I'm pretty drunk, so...
She's like, going to sleep soon, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I am wearing headphones.
Oh, there she is.
I have a...
Do you want to sing a song?
I'm in my microphone.
You're in the microphone.
I go have a microphone and...
Well, what do you sing a song?
I had to say this, la 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 la. I used to la 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 la.
Can you
see? She's so cute. That's out of control.
It's like living with a cartoon character, actually.
And I have a thing in my microphone.
Yeah. She has like this voice. She sounds like a cartoon character.
Yeah.
It's adorable all the time.
Too cute
and
for
it's a little problematic.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hopefully in the next 2 hours and 20 minutes going to be able to care for my child. I'm around 5. Friends, email us at saucepodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at saucepodcast. Rate us on iTunes. We know you're listening. And let your friends know. We are on Spotify now, guys.
Yeah. Thank you for getting us on Spotify, Maya.
You bet.
You can find me if you want to contact me directly. I am at GynoStar on all the social medias.
I am at Maya Garant anywhere you are looking for Maya Garantes.
So reach out and we hope to hear from you.
We do hope to hear from you very soon. We love you guys. We love our listeners.
We really do. Y'all are the best. Adios, amibas.